pay it back. The government wants to have our movement, and there are no strings attached. And they say there are no strings attached.
That was Morgan Firestar from her album No Strings Attached. Morgan was a worker and activist against the abuses in psychiatric institutions and a longtime fighter for the rights of people who were victimized by those institutions. She died 3 months ago, and her songs live on. We're going to be playing some of her songs. This is the extended version of Bathrobe Spears' Broadsides on August 16th, or possibly later, since this is a loop tape you're listening to on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're hoping that the loop tape masters of the air who choose these tapes, and I'm not one of them, will allow this tape to go out back-to-back with the first hour and a half of Bathrobe Spears' Broadsides, making a dynamic, endless three-hour show. But if not, this perhaps will stand on its own. We're going to be listening to the second half of the Naughty Lee Master Norris interview. That's Tom Naughty, the Bubble Man, Linda LeMaster, a Housing Now in Santa Cruz activist, and of course myself, Robert Norris, or Bathrobe Spears Robert, civil rights activist in Santa Cruz and elsewhere concerned with rights of poor people inside and out. That is, indoors and out, I should say. This interview was recorded a year ago, and we began it in the prior tape, the last show, hopefully, which talks about different strategies for getting changes in the law and tolerance for power for and respect for low-income people and their basic rights to do such things as to sleep and to exist in public spaces and do their business. Then for the second half of the tape, we have a replay of a 45-minute show that happened on radio station KZSC, which is the Talk About show. And Talk About is a show that normally happens every Wednesday at 7 o'clock on KZSC, an FM station on the extreme left end of the radio dial, though unfortunately not of the ideological spectrum, although they are, I suppose, comparatively pretty left. So let's pick up from where we were with myself, Tom Naughty, and Linda LeMaster talking about activism in Santa Cruz. And actually, we're discussing the Scotts Creek Bluff activism, which was activism around something that happened 20 years ago when the police tried to drove all the homeless youths, undesirable transient elements, people who lived in their vans and cars out of town. They clustered at Scotts Creek Bluff. And they were busted there by the county sheriffs, and they fought back. They occupied the county building, they were arrested again for trespass, and then they won the longest misdemeanor trial up to then in Santa Cruz history in the summer of 1978. And the discussion kind of ranges from there to Tom Naughty's successful attempts to get the street musicians the street performers' voluntary conduct guidelines passed and accepted by city council instead of restrictive laws, through his attempts to negotiate in the food wars of the late 80s when Marty Wormhout, the mayor, sent out her police to arrest people for serving free food at the town clock. So anyway, let's hear some more of that discussion, and let's hear your comments. Call me at 408-423-4833. That's 423-HUFF, for those of you who are word rather than number-minded. HUFF, of course, stands for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is the name of the organization that I've been with for 6-7 years. In fact, co-founded. So, again, stay with Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Give us a call and listen to Bathrobe Spears' Broadsides. We join in progress this year-old conversation between myself, activist Tom Naughty, and activist Linda LeMaster. Tom has been discussing his successful action to, for the first time in this county, secure food stamps for homeless people without addresses, as well as his successful attempt to secure at least publicity for basic rights for van dwellers, and then later on to get guidelines for street performers that were, this is the most important thing, optional, not mandatory or legally mandated or the basis for police action.
And now I was able to talk to Gary Patton in another time, and he had been, on some level, the enemy prior to. However, I did feel that it was dangerous for me to be of such use to the conservatives locally that I could be used to attack the progressives and weaken their base and help elect conservatives. The danger, one, was that we would end up with conservatives in town doing things their way. Their development practices would prevail, and other things that didn't relate to my issues would work in ways that I did not prefer. But also, I would never get the ear of the progressive community if I was of such use to the conservatives. Mm-hmm. And my only hope, ultimately, of changing the approach toward homeless people was to have the support of the progressive community in Santa Cruz. And so I didn't want to end up being seen as a tool to undermine the progressive movement, which was looking to secure some say-so in county and city politics in Santa Cruz. And so while Marilyn Lydicote suggested to the Scott Creek people more than once that she didn't see why something couldn't be set up for homeless people, maybe, you know, some place in the county. This was clearly a political ploy to encourage me to keep doing what I was doing, because what I was doing was going to hurt Baldwin Borovats and Patton during the recall campaign. She would like me to keep doing this. I was of use to her. I then went to Patton and Baldwin and said, this is what I think she's doing, and I have to do it. I'm going to continue to go after you. Give me something. Give me some reason to back off. Create a temporary...
frankly?
Mm-hmm.
Well...
Yeah, well, I was pretty upfront with them about the political nature of things as well. So give me some reason. Otherwise, what choice do I have? But, and they said, well, you don't really believe her. No, I don't believe her, but that doesn't matter. That's what she's put it forward. I have to grasp it. I have the only straw. Clearly, I have no political power. The name of the group that's meeting with you here is called the Illegal Campers Group. We want to change our name, you know. You know, and you're our only hope for that, you know. You who have a progressive majority now. And I think you should identify yourself with us, and I think it can only help, because it'll at least help secure your base during the upcoming election if you, you know, if you encourage the people who aren't really following this issue but see themselves as progressives. If they see you on our side, then they will rethink the issue, and, you know.
Yeah.
There's
Does anybody disagree with you in this strategy, or did everybody support you in this?
Well, he was doing all the work of that.
Well, there were certainly people that disagreed with me about it.
There were people that took Lydicote seriously, like she really meant to be helpful. Of course, she recanted, but people thought, oh, wow, there's a little tingle of a promise of help, you know, let's focus on just that, you know.
What else did you observe about this period in terms of time strategy?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I tried to be helpful and supportive both in all the research and in some of this, what I consider lobbying, but...
And you had a place that people were laying all over the floor at your house, and,
yeah,
and your typewriter was
the real
was
support I was able to give got me evicted.
I'll bet it did.
My neighbors decided I was running a prostitution ring because people would come to my house taking showers on their way to court, fresh from the beach. I mean, they got to drive 20 miles to get to court.
So the strategy you used, you're describing, getting back to the food stamp stuff, or perhaps unless you want to round out.
No, let's go to the food stamp.
I think what made a difference, and I don't know how you could do this now, is that when Tom got focused on the issue and was able to show there were people concerned about it and there were people being affected by it, real people with names and faces that were here, there was an attorney and a base for getting legal support. And that's harder to do now, in spite of the fact that Legal Aid decided to sue the county using the state's data for its abhorrent low-income and affordable housing policies, in the housing element. despite that one gesture, it's not as easy right now as it was in the early 80s or late 70s to walk in off the street and say, look what's happening here. You know, I mean, even those people who feel like civil rights belong to everyone, except prisoners or aliens or something, that's a common belief in our society. Even people who believe that aren't willing to get behind it, you know, to insist on it right now.
So again, returning to the focus, which is Tom's disagreements with the strategies of 1988 and his perceptions of it.
I thought you were just moving up to the food stamp.
I am, but from that position. You're showing how your actions, I'm thinking this, this for you to describe how your actions were successful in the 78, or whenever the food stamp thing happened, and contrasted with the actions of 88, or 94, or 95. In fact, the lessons that you learned could be so applied.
I'm pretty sure it was 79.
Okay.
And so what happened was the progressives were in fact recalled. The conservatives had the Board of Supervisors. And Gary Patton was the lone progressive voice on that board. And so I had to talk to Gary Patton again, who I was still not happy with regarding how he acted during the Scott Creek case, which, by the way, was resolved in a jury trial where we were acquitted of everything the jury favored our position.
And put on a pseudo-probation for costing this world money, I guess.
Well, they were put on a pseudo-probation at the same time.
Yeah.
did you need to be harassed for living in your vehicles?
No. Okay. In fact, even during the Scott Creek case, I got a ticket. At one point, Officer Andy Crane gave me a ticket for living my van in the city. Something I fought, and among the things that we did then was to launch a suit against the county and the tow truck operators who took our vans away at Scott Creek, and we added the city to it, that suit. And pretty soon the city backed off completely. They decided to allow the county to deal with this. They had, and so I got no further tickets. I mean, I would sit in my van with my light on late at night. I'd watch cop cars cruising by slowly, who would not stop and knock at my door. I mean, they had stopped this this city campaign. They decided they didn't want to be party to this Scott Creek ongoing thing that was now being fought. And okay. Of course, they would leave that.
You know how long they continued this hands up?
No, I actually don't. It lasted as long as I was... I don't know. But in 79, this conservative board made a move on food stamps. Something they didn't really have any legal right to do. We were going to win in court as soon as we got into court. In the meantime, the first of the month would come and go. Lots of people would not receive their food stamps. Lots of them would not know what was going on. They would leave town. That was the conservatives' plan.
And the bureaucrats and the progressives were going right along with it.
And so I went to Gary Patton at some rally that he had, some gathering of progressive supporters of his. And I spoke to him before he went on. And although I was never happy with the way Gary Patton had danced around the Scott Creek issue, it wasn't, it seemed to me, useful for me to be vindictive or to accuse him of being pseudo-progressive or so-called or to attack him in any way. It was now useful to me if he would get in front of this group and among the rallying points he was speaking to them about, if he would add this attack on the core by the conservatives as something that he opposed. Then it would help in my overall idea that what we really needed was the progressives in town to be supporting the homeless in town. He did just that. He did this.
What was the effect of
that? Well, individually that day, the effect was, right. And a lot of people who in that crowd didn't know what their position on the homeless thing was that those squatters, I don't know, they didn't know much about the issue, suddenly saw it as part of the progressive agenda.
Yeah.
You know, that rights of homeless people were something that they stood for.
Now, Linda, you were criticizing, you were saying that the progressives were part of this thing by conservatives.
Well, it's my opinion in general, in a sort of long-reaching way, that there's a lot of people who identify themselves with a progressive agenda who got there through their reaction to another agenda. You could say Republican or whatever, old boys club, that's the phrase I would use, in the city. And they don't feel in their gut what they don't stand for anything. You know,
well,
they're not trying to make a progressive community or anything. So what I'm saying is that they can react to something they don't like.
So I'm talking
negative
about this
pull.
Specific situation.
They can't
in
initiate.
78 or 79. When Tom got Gary Cannon to change his position on the food stamp issue, do you have any recollection of anything pertinent to that?
But just to be clear, I got him to establish a position.
Yeah.
How did he establish it?
It wasn't that he had a position.
What?
And then he changed it.
I think it's an effective strategy. I think in general, if I were to throw my energy or insight with Tom's strategy he's describing here, I wouldn't stop at the progressives and just try to make that side of the political power brokers our friend or convince them that it's in their interest to recognize our interests. I would, you know, like I try to maintain a relationship with Bob Lissner because he's the only right-wing reactionary, you know, truly right-wing person that I can talk to very long and we both still listen, you know. And I
again, you're not really answering my question, which is, in the 1978 Act 79 action, do you have anything to add about what happened then, specifically, that you remember facts or details or specifics about how progressives were... You interrupted Tom to say, oh, the progressives supported that conservative stuff, and they didn't oppose it, and so forth. So do you have anything you want to add about that? That's what I'm looking for.
I think the food stamp thing was effective because all the bases that were touched or dealt with are even effectively utilized. You know, including he had the attention of a majority of people in the County Board of Supervisors. He was talking about that part. But he also was talking to the bureaucrats like Ira Lowe Bell. Well, not in this case him, but the people that controlled the implementation.
You're not answering my question.
I'm not answering it to your satisfaction.
No, you're not responding to what I'm saying. You said conservatives, you said progressives were doing nothing, is what you said. I want to expand.
They don't have their own agenda. They didn't at that time, they don't now. Perhaps in between they have, but where it comes to homeless people and human and civil rights, usually they don't have. In my experience of them, since Mike Zaharakis run against
time,
Mike Rodkin, I haven't seen it.
So they didn't have an agenda, is what you're saying.
Progressives did not represent a power base that had any content in this community. They just represented a big mailing list.
Okay. Go ahead, Tom.
In my opinion.
So we did end up with some support among progressives on this issue. In fact, some reporter on the Sentinel ended up getting us, I won in court the case. As I said, that was always inevitable. They didn't have any law. Some reporter on the Sentinel said that he was going to see, too, that we got a banner headline above where it says San Francisco Sentinel.
Did you?
Because, yeah, Paul...
Remember his name?
Paul Beattie?
Paul Beattie, yeah. The old guy
I'm
on the street there.
Probably is one of the most important reporters I've had at the Sentinel.
Yeah, he, and on the theory, he told me he was going to try and get a banner headline as a result because he believed that a lot of the people who would be interested in this piece of news that the county was no longer cutting off food stamps to people who had no place to live, he believed a lot of those people didn't actually buy newspapers, that they read the headlines in the box. So if it was down at the bottom of the page, they still wouldn't know we're on page two. So it would be most important that that be a banner headline.
Cool.
Bless his heart, they did that. I didn't know he had that kind of sway. I thought it was just a report.
He got them one of their few awards for his homeless work in San Lorenzo Park.
Uh-huh.
So the next...
So during that campaign, also, I had to... go ahead. The county, the Smith, his name was, a conservative from South County, supervisor, had died. Jerry Brown was the governor, and he had to appoint a replacement supervisor. This is was a political kind of thing when it happens. So he was looking for somebody progressive from South County to appoint. He picked this guy, Chris Matthews, who I didn't know much about, but I'd heard that he was some progressive.
At the time when that happened, he was already going to... I didn't get anyone for you.
Really? But I heard that he was a progressive, and so... So I set up a meeting with him, as I had with each of the supervisors that would agree to meet to discuss these issues. And had a meeting with him, and I ran down to him my spiel on the matter, how they had no right to use food as a weapon to drive people out of this county, that was not only against state and federal law, but it was in fact against the Geneva Convention.
Wow.
And he sat politely and listened to my whole spiel, and then I waited to hear what his response would be, because I had dealt with progressives before, and I knew progressive politicians before, and I knew, as with all politicians, what you had to do now was wait and hear what they say, and try and decode what they say, and see what it might mean to your situation. Would they commit themselves to bring it up with their next meeting after? Would they put something on the agenda? Ah, this is reality. The other is, you know, carrying on. And so I waited to see what he might say so that I could decode how Chris Matthews might come down on the matter of food stamps.
Yeah.
And Chris's first response after all this was, you know, I described how the conservatives on the board had voted to cut people off of food stamps. They had no place to live. And I waited to see how he would respond, and his response was, "God damn, that pisses me off when they pull that shit." So I thought from that I did have a fair understanding of how he might come down on this issue. So it didn't take a lot of decoding. So bless his heart. So now there were two progressive politicians who supported at least my position on this issue, and that could only help to spread.
And that's Gary and Chris.
And spread among the progressive politicians or bureaucrats or progressive-minded people in the county the idea that homeless issues are their issues. I think it had that effect.
This was in 1979?
79,
yeah.
I think it was.
So, 79 was also the date that sleeping ban in the city was strengthened. Did you get involved in any of that active stuff?
Obviously not.
The sleeping ban in the city was strengthened? I don't know that.
Yeah.
In what way?
Made it a misdemeanor to do it twice.
79?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I still hadn't dealt with city politicians yet. Mm-hmm. The city was still those conservatives.
Bunch of cops.
Right, the conservatives still ran the city council. And they were certainly anti-homeless. Mm-hmm. That was unlike Linda, I essentially, some of the people in the Scott Creek group, you know, were interested in sort of libertarian positions and socialist positions and communist positions and Republican positions and what did Marilyn Lydicote think, you know, and personally I decided that those things, you know, might be of some intellectual interest in some conversation, but as far as, like, getting anything done, which was what I thought my job was, I decided to just write off these frothy-faced guys who are never going to budge based on any conversation they've had with me.
Uh-huh.
Right? They were just out. I wasn't going to talk to Leesk and Trinchero and the other jewelers downtown who wanted to get rid of these people. Get rid of this thing that's going on in Santa Cruz.
Right.
But that I should talk to Coonerty and Mona and some of the other progressive-minded merchants downtown who wanted something from me, but they were bendable.
Mm-hmm.
that I could talk to these guys.
In the context of what particular issue?
Well, now we're moving into 1980 when there was an effort to ban street performing by the conservative city council.
Okay.
So as you say, in 79, the city council was conservative. They were still on this, how to get rid of these homeless people. The idea had arisen among the conservatives in town that the way this thing works, and partly based on the success that they had down in Carmel in changing how Carmel was seen as an artist community that attracted odd people, right, including homeless people. And in Carmel, they actually attacked it full out. They took a conservative position, get rid of these goddamn people. They turned sprinklers on them. They really got rid of them. And partly based on, they studied that the local progressives, conservatives, saw that it was a big problem here, and the way to get rid of them is to send a message to the Rainbow Gathering that as it was described in group meetings that I had attended. The Rainbow Gathering was a place where bums got together to find out which communities were easy on us, which were the places to go to suck the tit mm-hmm. of the bureaucracy. And that Santa Cruz had a reputation among the people at the Rainbow Gathering as the place to go that was easy to get food stamps, it was easy to get everything that they had to give you, and it was a nice, welcoming community.
And indeed it does have that reputation, real or not.
Mm-hmm.
Among hippies and students.
Right, so their idea was then to send a message to the Rainbow Gathering that they were outrageous in Santa Cruz. That's, I think, part of the sheriff's strategy in busting us at Christmas was to make it intentionally a big issue. Mm-hmm. I thought initially they would never, once we got close enough to Christmas at Scott Creek, they would never bust us. They don't want a big issue like this and give us Christmas on our side. They wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. In the aftermath, I realized they intentionally did that. They didn't stumble into that. They wanted it to be a big issue. They thought we would, you know, roll over.
They didn't give a shit what happened to us. They wanted to make sure the recall got out before they give them resistance.
Mm-hmm.
They get the most money from the county. They wanted to keep that.
And so in 1980, there was a move to what they called Clean Up the Mall. And that was the same thing. They wanted to create a reputation as a town that you don't want to go to. And they wanted to get that message to the Rainbow Gathering.
Yeah.
And so they appointed this mall advisory committee, which was meant to give them, this was actually late 79 into 80, to give them, to advise the conservative city council to do a whole bunch of, the city council knew that there was this progressive movement that was threatening them politically, and they wanted the community to advise them to do what they wanted to do. And so they mm-hmm. appointed a committee that had members of all aspects of the community, essentially stacked as a merchants committee, with somebody from Women Against Rape and somebody from the campus and somebody from the other campus, but not enough votes to really affect what they were up to, which was the votes were going to come from the merchants. Bruce Van Allen at this time was the, I think Bruce and Mike Rodkin, Bruce Van Allen and Mike Rodkin were the two progressives on on the short end of a conservative board. And so I was appointed as the...
City Council.
I'm sorry, City Council.
Yeah.
So I was appointed as the street performer representative by Bruce Van Allen. Jan Luby, who was my sweetheart at that time, and was also a street performer. She was appointed as a one of the kind of wild cards they threw in, mall shopper representative.
Ah. That's cool.
Sure.
That's cool.
And the result was that we had two. Mm-hmm. And two was really, you know, I mean, we clearly weren't going to have enough votes to affect anything, but we, at least, if one makes a proposal and the other seconds it, mm-hmm. then it has to go into discussion. So at least we had two, so we could do that. But on the at that time, I mean, among the things that they were attacking were street performing. So I think it was mainly my presence on that committee that kind of attracted a lot of their attention to the question of street performing, because there was somebody to rebut what they were saying. And
so a lot of the other things that they were doing, suddenly street performing became the hot issue that the group was really debating. Everybody had a strong opinion, and opinions were going to move around street performing. Partly, I think, because there was resistance. There was me.
But it was in the setting of the mall, and that was a fertile time for artists and musicians, I think, in our town. Mm-hmm. That, you know, this crackdown was in response to people starting early and playing late. You know, some people that had their whole local reputation based on their work at the Avenue, they were looked for down there. Mm-hmm. And it was very fertile backdrop that what you were trying to get across had to draw on.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, my idea in this situation was that the only hope that we had was from the progressive community. The progressives had to see themselves and their interests as identical to the interests of the rights of homeless people, or poor people, or street performers, or street people, or there were not going to be enough street people voting in any context of political power to have any effect. It was the progressives that would vote, and that had some hope of winning some vote, like the next election into city council. So again, it was my intent was to encourage them to see their interests as co-equal with ours.
So what strategies did you use?
Well, I decided that I should, first of all, ignore Mr. Leask and Mr. Trinchero and some of the conservatives whose intent was to, you know, hit me on the head and send me to the Rainbow Gathering to tell people you hit on the head in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. And instead, I should be addressing the progressives and see if they too had problems with homeless people on the mall. They too had problems with street performers on the mall. And so if I could find out what was reasonable, if there was anything reasonable about their objections, maybe those could be addressed. Maybe we had common ground. And so I was on the social concerns subcommittee of the mall advisory committee to the city council. And in that context, we had some meetings with those who were concerned about the social concerns, as opposed to the law and order committee, subcommittee, and stuff like this, which partly I think was an intentional distraction. But I kind of kept up with what the law and order guys were up to, too. And in addition, I decided that the street performers themselves should meet and discuss this. I put out flyers. We ended up with 35 street performers gathering. We addressed guidelines for street performers. We talked back and forth with the progressive merchants on adjusting the guidelines in such a way that they addressed their concerns and our concerns. We ended up with some agreement with them. At the same time, using that agreement as the base, I was able to get agreement from a number of progressive groups. Most important, which is to say most directly concerned, was a group called the Downtown Neighbors Association. I thought that would be, certainly sounds like a group that should be on the side of the downtown street performers. If I couldn't get the Downtown Business Association or the Downtown Association to be on our side, at least I should try for the Downtown Neighbors, suggesting that this is really a split between the people who live and use this as their community and the people who use it for their business, you know. And even among the business people, there was a split between conservatives who thought street performance should be allowed. And I should more and more isolate Leask and his crowd meeting every morning at the old theater cafe and looking like the guys who want to stop the music. This was a useful picture. And they did. They literally wanted to stop not only the street performing, but the music of the outdoor cafe at the Cooper House. Bless their hearts. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have designed a better program for them.
Was
they wanted to shut off the light jazz that was the center of town. I mean, they wanted to lower the planter boxes to 6 inches so that people wouldn't sit on them. Mm-hmm. Not realizing that the hippies would. Nobody else would. Yeah. You get rid of the old people that way. You know? You can get rid of those planter boxes. We'll sit on the sidewalk. You know, I told them. But I mean, they unfortunately, they were so out of touch with the heart of the community that they really did put forward proposals that I was able to reprint, and I did. I literally reprint, blew up, gave it a headline, and nothing else. I didn't have to put words in their mouth. I could just spread around. I made sure press releases went to the newspapers indicating what was talked about at the recent meeting, you know, and here's a proposal that's coming from the city council. They're proposing that we shut off the music and get rid of the benches. That's their idea, you know. Mm-hmm. And the community, I posted that up and down the streets, you know. And the community got the idea that this was, you know, something outrageous was going on. And I was able to say it only in their words. And so the result was that I ended up with the Downtown Neighbors Association support. I did benefits for the Downtown Neighbors Association. I did benefits for the Phoenix newspaper, which had run an editorial in which somebody taking from a woman's perspective, they were attacking the gathering of homeless people on the mall, or the gathering of men on the mall who were harassing women who went by. And so this attack on homeless people was being joined by elements of the progressive community. Thought it was important that we encourage the progressive community to look at that picture again and see what they're joining. Mm-hmm. And so I could have attacked the Phoenix and their position, and I did write a letter in which I strongly disagreed and pointed out where the error in literal errors in her statements were. I went to the transcript from the meeting wherein she misquoted me, and I showed her the correction. And at the same time, I did a benefit for the Phoenix, which was a progressive voice in town. And from the stage, I was able to address the progressive people who came out to support the Phoenix, and the homeless people who we had permitted in as we had somebody at the door doing negotiations for the unemployed. And so I was able to get those people together, homeless people and progressives, into the same place and address them as though they were one thing, which they were. They were my audience. They were one thing. From the amplified position of the stage. And then it was a great show that ended with the Flying Karamazov Brothers and everybody on their feet, and they really did become more one thing. Of course, that was only the 200 people.
And what happened was you defeated these two proposals, the benches stayed and the music stayed.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know how real the threat to the benches was, you know. It was useful to me that their crazies went too far, and I amplified the voice of their crazies, but I don't think that there was really an actual threat to eliminate benches.
I think that the important effect he had was that musicians and street performers were in fact empowered by having been given the chance to be responsible for their own behavior. You know, now, I have a fundamental criticism of what Tom accomplished, but that doesn't take away from this.
And what is that criticism?
Well, that in order to accomplish this with street music, basically he organized them like a union, you know? And they had a solid objective in common that helped them connect with each other. But to do this, he had to make the distinction between street performers and other street behaviors. And so it was a step toward a closed circuit of people and away from drifting through homeless people, you know. And so, and I'm not criticizing your political work because that needed to be accomplished, but I'm sad about it because it left a whole set of people out in the cold, as it were, psychologically speaking, you know. I don't know, I've thought for years since, you know, I have talked about it, what could be done differently, you know. I mean, if I ever had the energy, I would start a mother's union. I would copy exactly the things you did that I know about. I think it's effective. But Patrice did the same thing before she died, you know. After the earthquake, it was like, who's going to get the new housing, you know. So all the displaced new homeless people decided they were better than people who had been living out of shopping carts. And the same, you know, it's like you put a new political divide among people who have something in common. In your case, the sidewalk downtown, in order to give them commonality with an in-group. It's moving a barrier. And I would like to see us, in our strategies, take those barriers into account and recognize and acknowledge them publicly when we have the chance, at least.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that, you know, that was one of the questions that we as a group were dealing with. There were a number of people in the street performers
guild, which we formed, who wanted to be a little more literal about guild. I mean, some of the medieval guilds were there for the purpose of keeping out other craftspeople whose quality was not up to theirs, or some making those kinds of exclusions. There were people who wanted to make a big part of what we were saying, that we were not street people. I see, a lot of street performers are not. They were not living on the street. They were not drifting through town. They live here. They're out there playing music. They wanted to make that an important distinction. They wanted to say, I am not panhandling. I am giving something. I'm not there with my hand out. There were proposals like that, and there were a number of us, though, who fought really hard that those kinds of distinctions not be made. That
at least in your dialogue with the city.
Or at all. I mean, in not in our guidelines, not in any statement that came from us, not to the city council, not to other groups that who were organized to resist.
That was smart.
Yeah, well, I thought so. Some of the other people who were maybe a little more desperate, I didn't think that street performing, you know, was... I thought that we could win this and we could get good stuff out of this no matter how they go.
Mm-hmm.
If they end up outlawing street performing, we'll have a good time. We'll have a great show. We'll get arrested for it. We'll get publicity for it. We'll have Tom Scribner with us. This was going to go... We were really in a win-win situation. And they were some couple of different days, were in an iffy situation. They were going to end up, you know, either completely dissatisfied with what they did or very dissatisfied with what they did. They were not in a really good position, I thought. I was very confident around this issue, you know. Not that we would necessarily get legislation that we wanted, but we would get a situation that we would like.
You initially criticized Jane Immler's approach when she came to town. Right? You felt that she was wrong in what she was doing. Or then you felt that you changed your mind. You thought it worked. What was your...
Yeah, well, Jane, and then there was a big gap. Well, actually, the next year, that was 80. That was the street performers. 81, there was something else. And then Peter Carrada came through town, and he was chased by the merchants. I ended up... Because I'd met Marty Wormhout as a member of the Downtown Neighbors Association, I was able to introduce Marty to Peter Carrada. They ended up with some... he hadn't wanted to be political. She didn't like his trip. But they ended up meeting and coming to some accommodation. I'd sort of backed off, and now I was playing kind of because I wasn't in town all the time. I 82, I got this gig that started leading the gigs everywhere. And so through the years now, I was kind of backed up, and then there was like this gap. Now, Peter Carrada wasn't there. There were a couple of people who'd say stuff, but there was no real organized entity, really, on the streets. And then Jane, bless her heart, became very active and was demanding that the city create shelter, literally a certain number of beds. And she went to the city council and took positions that were seen as rude by the progressives. She was willing to be seen as rude and demanded that they give a certain number of beds, which eventually led her to going on a fast in support of that demand. I did think that had she approached John Laird and Marty Wormhout more carefully, she could have ended up making that request and having the political support of the progressives and getting it. I may be wrong. What do you think about that?
Well, I think he's right as far as that goes, that she could have worked that particular...